You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1. The show with nonstop chirps.
I have a family member that is maybe the worst golf player in the
history of the game. I know what you're going to say. Worst player ever, and he chirps people.
He chirps, but he's always got an excuse.
Well, bad back.
This guy will launch one 400 meters into the woods and go, I slipped. You know, it's like, no, you didn't. You just did that in the last hole.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, so Noodles is away today. He's calling a hockey game tonight.
Where?
Which means I think he's in Montreal tonight. Dave Poulin is in the house.
Well, this was part of a little swap that Noodles and I were involved in that dealt with Jerome McGinley night and covering that and him not being available. So that's all part of this transaction.
Oh, so you guys worked out a trade.
We made a trade.
And now you get to, instead of have a day off, you got to come in and talk to us two bozos.
That trade was what announce? I held out for. That's what I held out for.
Is that right?
He wasn't willing to give up a day when he would miss Overdrive. He wanted a weekend game.
I see. But
so I told him without the opportunity to be able to work with Jeff and Brian, I wasn't going to do the deal.
Well, I'm glad you held your own there.
One of the better deals I've made lately.
I think it was a great deal.
Yeah.
I think this was a great deal.
There might have
been
cash involved, too.
I'm glad you're involved. I'm glad
significant
you're here.
Cash.
Well, there's another reason why I'm here, beyond the fact that you're our buddy. But Noodles, as we all know, is from beautiful Edmonton, Alberta, St. Albert to be exact, and played in the WHL. So he played throughout the Western provinces. But you're an Ontario boy yourself. And because March Madness is beginning today, we thought every day we're on the air when there are games being played. So basically the next two Thursdays and Fridays and then Championship Monday, I believe, we're going to set up our own like Final Four, and we're going to have our own kind of creation and our own topics and our own little bracket. And you can go on Twitter at Overdrive 1050 and vote. And we decided today, and we're going to hold off on this for Noodles because I thought Noodles would love to be included in this. But then on second thought, I'm like, we need a guy who's from Ontario that would be familiar with all these towns, the top four grittiest towns in Ontario,
which I have issue with. My hometown not being included on it, but we'll get into that.
I think there is some like when you're talking about, I don't consider Windsor a gritty town.
Are you serious?
I think of a town like Lindsay, Ontario.
Well, you're thinking of Windsor and you're thinking casinos and golf courses.
I think you gotta, I don't know. Like, I think of Peterborough, Lindsay.
Oh, I think Windsor is, it was a four seed, but it could have easily been the number one seed grittiest city in the province. Windsor is, it's steel.
Okay, you're talking plants versus
like punching you in the face when you walk in a pub.
You got to go logging or mining.
Thunder Bay.
There's a lot of them in Ontario. You're from Timmins.
I'm from Timmins. It's a pretty gritty town. Okay?
Timmins, man, not
that
Windsor.
That is a gritty town. That's a gritty town for a lot of reasons. You got 9 months of good outdoor ice. That's a gritty reason.
Right.
Okay. And then I see Sudbury on the list. I'm like, that's where we went on spring break.
That was your like Miami, like South Beach?
That was like
that
South
was his
Beach.
Grand Bend, Sudbury.
Sudbury was Muskoka for you guys?
If you got to go down to Sudbury, that was like, that was vacation time.
Wow. I don't know what to tell you, man. I'm a Toronto guy. I just assumed that we picked four very quality, gritty towns. Because this was the matchup, okay? The number one seed was Sudbury, also known as Muskoka if you're from Timmins. And it beat out the four seed Windsor. So Sudbury's into the final. And the Sault Ste. Marie, which is very gritty. You can grant us that.
Another town we went to on spring break.
That was like a luxurious
spot. Look at the
spot.
Latitude of where it is.
Are you serious?
Santa Claus came up to Timmins.
Imagine telling someone I'm going to go catch some rays in the Sault. I'm going tanning in the Sioux.
Think of all those beautiful waterways in the Sioux.
Wow. I can't believe
how gritty. There's beach in the Sioux.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I'm ignorant to it. I'm ignorant to the grittiness of Timmins, Ontario.
We're going to hear from Kyle Dubas. He's going to say some of the most beautiful beaches in the world are
right.
In the Sioux.
Well, the Sioux lost. There was an upset. The three seed, Oshawa, is off to the finals. So it's Sudbury, Oshawa. The voting is on.
So you got a mining town and an industry town. A car town.
Right? Oshawa is gritty. And obviously we know they got hit pretty hard with the whole GM plant. Like in a year and a half, it'll be potentially an even grittier spot. We'll see what happens there. But I guess I'm just going based on reputation.
And how did the seeding go? Were you involved solely in the seeding?
Well, pretty much. It's very arbitrary in the end. It doesn't really matter.
You need
that
to
much.
Talk to people before you decide the cities.
I guess I screwed this up.
You should have had a poll to see which cities went in the poll.
My bad.
Keswick? Keswick?
Keswick isn't nearly as gritty as Windsor. Like, have you been to Windsor?
Have you ever been to Sutton, Ontario? They would kick your ass if you wore that shirt in Sutton.
Well, you could say that about any little town.
Malls, you know where Sutton is, right? No, never
heard. I know where Sutton is. You know, you go to Port Perry.
How about Forest?
Port Perry.
Forest is a great... That's a nice little gritty town.
Forest?
Yeah.
I haven't even heard of Forest.
Me neither.
Well, there's a reason.
What about Elmvale, Ontario? You ever been through Elmvale?
That sounds like a suburb. That sounds like somebody named the suburb Elmvale. Dude. There's probably gates.
A gritty town is near Collingwood, Meaford.
Oh, yeah.
Meaford.
And we should be buying there because in 10 years.
Oh, it's a beautiful little town. It's a beautiful little town.
How is it a beautiful little town if it's a gritty town?
It's gritty, but I shop there. There's a place called the Meaford Market. Get furniture, everything there. It is dynamite.
Haircut, everything's right there.
Sarnia is getting a lot of love online. Sarnia is very gritty.
Mm-hmm.
Very gritty. Beaverton.
Beaverton. My uncle had a rock farm in Beaverton.
A rock farm?
Yeah.
What is
so
that?
He got the mining covered.
I don't know what it is, but he had a rock farm.
He grew rocks.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. God bless his soul, Uncle Gord. He had a rock farm.
Did you tell him that he's not supposed to have a rock farm?
I don't know. It was his farm. He had rock farm.
But I don't understand.
He didn't grow rocks, you idiot. Well, it was just a rocky farm.
I know you can't grow rocks.
Yeah, what do you think? He had a pet rock factory?
I guess. What is he, Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys?
Like, is he the uncle that left you like 9 mil in the will? Uncle?
No. 9 million rocks.
Different uncle?
Imagine you were included in the will. Jeff, my favorite nephew, you get all of the rocks. All right. Moving on here, because I'm sensing we should. Pooley, I saw your SportsCenter hit after the Leaf game last night. Austin Matthews revving up. Yes. Doesn't it feel like this guy, he's got April 10th circled, and he's like, I am going to start dragging this team if I have to.
But
best
here's what you
I've
want.
Play.
You want that every night. That's what you want.
I told him yesterday, I'm like, once that's you set a superstar. The standard, that's a superstar. When I played against Eric Lindros or Peter Forsberg, and yours is Gretzky and Messier and the whole shebang, it's every night. That's what they bring every night.
Yeah, the true superstar is doing that 72 nights out of the 82 nights. Yeah. Like, that's the superstar.
Yeah, they get
that's what
five
Sidney does.
Yeah, five stinkers and then five average ones.
Yeah. And their stinkers and average ones aren't as bad as yours. They're not.
Yeah.
But
their average ones, they might have 1-1 on a power play, but they didn't really do much.
And, you know, we talk about machines, and a machine, if you turn on a good machine, it's exactly the same every time, right? That's by definition. And that's what the coach wants out of his team, but he wants it out of his players first. And he was – last night was a different step. We did Tuesday night against Nashville, he was good. Last night he was better.
Yeah, he was.
He was better. And with and without
the puck. But as far as back-to-back games, like – as good as he is, he has some floater nights where it's just swooping around, seeing what's sniffing around. He was like, I'm going to get that puck, and nobody on the ice is stopping me. And it was good on Tuesday night, and it was even better last night. It was like, that's a guy that should be playing 20 minutes a night. The guy that floats around and is sniffing around, that guy could play 30 minutes a night because it's not doing a whole lot.
Well, he's a stick checker by nature. You know, that's what he does. But there's a difference between a flyby, and I'll try, you know, a little pickle stab.
And a drive-through.
And I'm going through.
But there's also Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby doesn't really hit that much, like plant guys through the boards. But, man, he gets in there and he gets that puck. I think he's a very physical player for a guy that doesn't have a lot of body contact.
Well, it's not a big running hit. It's more of a...
it's just, I'm going to get in there and grind it out and get the
puck. Leveraged hit, yeah.
Right, and Matthews is capable of doing that.
Well, he's bigger. Like, you forget how big that kid is.
Right.
He's 6 foot four, 230
Like, you stand beside him, and you're like, you know, and the way we watch games, it's interesting. When you're on the panel and you're watching games, the level, I mean, you're looking for that specifically. You got multiple TVs there, and you're looking for content, and you're looking to exactly how, in the intermission, you're going to describe that person. And there's some nights when you look over at O and say, is so-and-so playing?
Yeah.
Like, are they...
Once a game,
have you heard that name?
we'll pick one guy out and it's like, is that guy even playing?
Have we heard his name? Because you obviously you're plugged in sound-wise, but you're watching closely to see what's happening. And there are games when you're like, you know, on either team, you're like, holy smokes, is so-and-so, is he dressed? Like, have you heard his name? And we'll say, no, I haven't even heard his name. Mm-hmm. And you're halfway through the third. And Austin Matthews last night was so visible. That's what he was, right? No matter how big your screen was, he was in the middle of it. So guess what? If I'm the coach.
I'm loving that, and I'm playing him a lot because the coach is picking up on that,
and
too.
I'm also demanding it of him. Like, I'm saying, okay, now, this wasn't me that played like this. This was you.
Well, how often does that happen where when you go in, I mean, it didn't happen back in your days because technology wasn't what it was, but my understanding is Babcock meets with these guys almost on a daily basis, individually, for a quick video review, like 5 minutes, in and out. Come in, hey, how you doing? This is what I saw. How often should that be positive reinforcement?
It's both. It's both. It's got to be both. Because guess what now? The positive reinforcement he gives him last night is really negative about what else he's done.
Right. Remember the day before? Yeah. I showed you the tape before. It was the opposite of this.
Here's the good news. This is really positive. Here's the bad news. I want to see it every game.
Well, I liked his comments after the game as well. You know, this guy has been talking a lot. He speaks with the media on a daily basis. I think he's getting very comfortable. I think it's a sign of what's coming in the future. Everyone's got their own take on who should be the captain. I think it's all basically a moot point because I'm pretty sure it will be Matthews. No guarantees, but I think it will be Matthews. But I like that he said after the game, that felt like a must-win for us. A must-win. Because it wasn't. They didn't have to win that game. Even if they lost the game, Montreal's still 8 points behind them. They'd feel secure about making the playoffs, and they know who they were and who they are. But I like that kind of conviction.
When he feels like that every night, then you have a superstar in your hands, like a true superstar. And, you know, this whole thing about generational player, well, he's not a generational player. He's a generational talent, and there's a big difference. Sidney Crosby's a generational player. He's got 3 Stanley Cups. He's got multiple hearts. He's got everything else on his list. A generational talent may have the ability to do that.
Well, there was another element to the game yesterday where we talked about in Jerry's After Dark. Let's answer the question.
Jerry Sparks shuts the door and the Leafs win a tight one. Suck on that one, Babs.
Did he or did he not?
He did exactly what you want to see a backup goalie do.
And there was nothing pretty about it.
No.
There's you're not going style points on that at all.
Biggest play of the game, though, was that breakaway save because it was like they were dominating. The shots were like 17-3 or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
And then he has a breakaway.
Breakaway stop in the first.
Although they ultimately did get the first goal.
Yeah.
But that was the breakaway save on Larson not at 1-1?
No, I think it was 0-0.
0-0.
Okay.
Yeah, but they still scored the first goal, right. So I just thought it was a big play for him.
And then you had the Eichel save, too, shorthanded. The power move when he was going down frontwards and he got his pad on it. So he battled. That's what he did. He battled. That's what he's got to do. I don't care if he wins on style points. Stop the puck and win the game.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially as a backup.
He's a slippery goaltender. I mean, even that Mittelstadt goal, and you saw the one in Ottawa where it's like a slide across, and then it's like,
there's no brakes on the slide.
There's no brakes on it. It's sliding.
It's never going to be pretty.
No.
Never going to be pretty.
It'll be pretty when you look and see, like, the Brossois kid in Winnipeg right now. When you look right now at this time of year and see 13-5-2.
Yeah, the stat line.
That's all that'll be pretty for me.
Right. And that guy was horrible in Edmonton.
And Calgary. He's in Calgary first. He's on his third team.
Yeah. Good one, finally.
Yeah.
We had a conversation last week about how many superstars are in the NHL. Carlo brought this up on the morning show.
Well, he thought there was 25.
He said, yeah, at least 25. And I disagreed with that.
I don't throw that term around that loosely.
Okay. I think there's 10 max.
So is Jack Eichel a superstar?
No way.
No.
No, he's not, right?
No.
No, he's like, a star player.
Star player, and a lot of it is the circumstance that he finds himself in. That Buffalo team is still terrible. Like, I like their start. They won 10 games in a row. I think they're moving in a better direction because of the pieces they have today compared to where they were 5 years ago when they were tanking and throwing everything overboard. But we discuss McDavid and his career all the time, and he's about to miss the playoffs for the third time in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
At least he got there once Jack Eichel hasn't even sniffed a playoff pursuit. Jack Eichel hasn't played a meaningful game in March yet in his career. This is fourth year. Fourth year. And it's not even close. Like, that's got to be concerning for him. We keep talking about McDavid. Is he going to put up with this? Why would Jack Eichel keep putting up with that?
Well, you know, I'm sure the Dallas Stars had a lot of questions about Mike Modano early on. They're like, and I think the same thing about Eichel. Is he just a really good player that might get 25 or 30 goals and 75 points? Or is he a winner? And I think there's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And Mike Modano had a change in philosophy. I think Hitchcock was a factor.
Stevie Yzerman.
Stevie Yzerman, same thing. Is he just a good player that puts up points, or is he a winner?
But eventually they got great players around those guys.
Well, they did. But you know what an interesting one to look at for me with McDavid is Mario. So Mario goes 4 years when he gets in the league without making the playoffs. Makes it his fifth year, doesn't make it his sixth year. He makes it once in his first 6 years, and it was in his fifth year. And then the challenge in front of Edmonton right now, then they brought in Craig Patrick as a GM, then they brought in Bob Johnson as a coach, and they brought Scott Bowman in. So it was management that changed in order to get the right players around Mario. But McDavid is way ahead of where Mario was at that point in his career. And look at his points, 168 points, whatever he was putting up, and not making the playoffs.
Yeah, and you talk about who you're playing with. Auston Matthews has played with Kapanen, Janssen, and
Hyman last year.
Well, who's his right winger right now?
Well, he's got William Nylander.
Well, William Nylander. Jack Eichel's playing with Jeff Skinner and Sam Reinhart. They're not exactly stiffs.
No, I'm not saying the line mates that he has. I'm talking about collectively the whole organization, where I'm not disputing that it's on him when he's on the ice, although I think he's pulled his weight.
Yeah, they got some talented players. And
they're thin.
They also do dumb stuff. Like some of the goals, it's just full possession, ringing off someone's ass in their own zone, ends up in the neutral zone, not managing them. Like, they do stuff that losers do.
Well, if you could be the GM of one team starting today, Edmonton or Buffalo?
I'll go with the Connor McDavid factor, although that is a big pile of a mess out there, and it's heavy lifting, and I don't know what the hell I even do, but I would take Edmonton.
That's an interesting call. That's an interesting call. It is.
I'd go Edmonton.
Yeah, I think I'm going to Edmonton, too.
Because I think Draisaitl, like, Darlene could get there.
Buffalo has some pieces, though.
Yeah, they do.
They have some pieces. The Ristolainen, if he's a three, then he's really good.
And Casey Darlene's Mittelstadt.
Although, like, I contradicted myself again. That was a quiz question the other night, and I said Buffalo. But I think it was after watching last night I changed my mind.
I didn't know that was a quiz question.
You know, it's funny when you think about it. You go back to, is Eichel a superstar? See, if I'm looking at Auston Matthews right now, I take his game last night, and a little bit to a lesser degree his game against Nashville, and that's the standard. Steals, takeaways, everything he does, that's the one thing you know. When you go see Sidney Crosby, you're pretty sure what you're going to get. Every night for a long number of years. So he sets his own bar. That's what it is. He set his own bar.
Well, it was
Eichel.
I don't think Eichel's going to get there, but he was like, if it wasn't the McDavid draft, the McDavid wasn't
he was going one.
Eichel was,
yeah,
like he was the most highly touted collegiate player in years, maybe in my lifetime. I don't remember another collegiate player okay, so that's early 90s.
Mid-90s.
But he didn't even go second overall. I thought he went like fourth, third or fourth.
Fourth.
Like Eichel was...
But he got drafted before college. And then he went into college and had the monster year.
Okay.
Gazillion points, national championship.
I think he was in college when he got drafted, Pooley. I'm pretty sure that he was a main black bear when he got drafted.
Yeah, he might have been. We can check that. Jimmy Montgomery was his right wing, obviously, or his centerman at that point.
He did the old Canadian national team thing, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, okay, let's say starting at Korea, the next 20 years, Eichel was the most highly touted collegiate player that I can think of.
Yeah,
I can't remember anyone else that
Noah
was close.
Noah Hanifin was highly regarded.
Yeah, Danny Heatley went to college, but I don't know. Eichel was hugely touted. And it's not that he's underperformed necessarily looking at him in a bubble. Like, his numbers are still very good. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of really good players.
There's a lot of really good players.
But true superstars?
Yeah. That's a different level. But I think your team has to help you with that a little bit, too.
They do.
And I don't think Buffalo's helped him at all. You know, this is his fourth year, and they're not even close.
Yeah, it's funny, though. Mario was a superstar before he had teammates.
Well, he was a superstar coming out of the draft, though. Right? Like, he was no different than what Lindros was, Crosby. The hype was massive for him.
So, funny story about that. So, it'd be 84, and Teddy Sater was our assistant coach in Philly. So, we're going in to play the Nordiques on a Saturday night. So, Friday night, he goes to watch this Mario Lemieux play. And the other big name that year out of Ontario was Kirk Muller. He went too. And Teddy had seen Kirk Muller play, and Kirk Muller was, you know, his type of guy, right? Just two-way player, captain, the whole bit. So I said, how was the Lemieux kid? He said, wouldn't touch him. I said, really? He goes, nope. Doesn't come back in his own end. Doesn't do this, doesn't do that, doesn't do that. I go, have any points? Yeah, he had 6 goals. He said, really?
Yeah. But he's a flawed player.
6 goals.
A lot of flaws there. I mean, there's a lot of red flags. You got to run from that type of talent.
I'll never forget that. Teddy was a little more focused on the defensive side of things.
I guess. Yeah, they lost 7-6. That's all that matters.
Yeah, he had 6.
Some rough news in terms of the injury bug with the Blue Jays. We'll tell you about that. The Raptors with a really impressive win in overtime last night. And I loved what Nick Nurse said postgame. This guy gets it. He knows what it's all about moving forward. We'll play that clip. We'll get into it next. Don't forget TSN 1050 and redtag.ca. I want to send you on a Maple Leaf playoff road trip. To enter, you follow us on Instagram at TSN 1050 and look for our playoff road trip post every Monday morning. Tag a roadworthy friend and then make sure you listen to Overdrive on Friday. And if your Instagram handle gets announced, you will have 10 minutes and 50 seconds to call in and claim your trip for two. Get all of the details at tsn1050.ca. Dave Pullen's in here. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter, will join us in a moment. So the Raps, they had that game all night. They played really well. Pascal Siakam, he's making a strong case for being the MVP of this team. Like, his numbers last night, I saw someone posted on Twitter, the only other guy who has posted a similar stat line to what we saw to him was Vince Carter back in, I think, 01. 33 points, 14 of 21 from the field, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. Like, this guy is just stuffing the stat sheet. And he's all over the court, and he's a ball of energy every time he's on the floor. He's really, really become an important piece. And he played large last night. But they
a superstar?
No, he's not a superstar.
Number 2 is a superstar.
Kawhi is a superstar. And Kawhi looked like a superstar last night. But you add Siakam doing what he's doing, and then a Lowry. Kyle comes back healthy. Marcus Saul's ball movement has been on display a lot recently. And their stats in terms of ball movement and open shots.
Van Fleet was good last night.
Van Fleet's been really good. Like, you can see it. They're starting to get it together here.
At the right time.
At the right time.
Load management. Last week in Philly, I did a game in Philly, and I had breakfast with a longtime guy I've known who just retired from the NBA, played 15 years, Jameer Nelson. Great, great little point guard, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I asked him about Kawhi. He said, legitimate superstar? He looked at me and goes, totally legitimate superstar. And he said, the interesting thing is you watched him grow into a superstar. He wasn't when he came into the league.
Right.
Like, he wasn't a generational talent coming into the league.
He came from San Diego State.
San Diego State. And it started with defense.
That's right.
That was his cred when he started. And he said to watch him now, he's just, every time you saw him, he did one more little thing really well.
That's exactly what's happened. He's added to his repertoire.
Yeah.
Like, now he can hit shots.
He it's
can
pretty
hit outside
cool.
shots.
He I'm not can... sure. I guess you can do that in hockey, but he had the size, clearly, right? You've got to have the size to be that effective in hoops.
I don't think you can add that much offensively. I think you can become more confident and find yourself in a better position, open yourself up to some more goal opportunities.
But in basketball, you can add a little bit more right-hand shot, a little bit more left-hand, a little post move.
You can work on your dribble. You can work on your shots coming
off the
screen.
You can have a three-pointer all of a sudden because you're stronger.
Exactly.
But I would agree, in hockey, you can only do so many things offensively, and you'll never be Connor McDavid,
if you don't have that talent, you don't have that talent. But this is what I loved most about last night was Nick Nurse postgame, because, you know, he said he thought the team played pretty well last night, but he put a positive spin on the experience and what came out of them actually going to overtime. Here's what Nick Nurse said postgame.
I'm not going to complain. We got out of here with a win, right? I don't really care what it looks like. And if you want to be a real positive person, you could say the overtime's good for us, right? Yeah. Playing in a tough game on the road, it's good for us. Can we regroup and fight and focus? And it's a good positive thing to take out of it.
That's a guy that knows anything you can bank now for 3 weeks from now is a positive. Anytime you can put your team in an uncomfortable position, which is what they're going to find themselves in come playoff time, is a huge positive. That's not much different than Kawhi saying the regular season is just a practice and the real stuff starts in the playoffs. Like, he didn't say it as bluntly as Kawhi did.
Is this a bigger trend with the load management this year than you've ever seen it in the NBA?
Oh, yeah. It's to the extreme now.
Like, and is it because of Kawhi Leonard?
No, I don't think so. I think other teams have done
it in the past. Well, San Antonio started it, really. It's interesting that he's a product of San Antonio, and they were the ones that did it before it was called load management.
And they had enough of the load management last year.
Cleveland was doing it years ago. LeBron, I think a couple guys, Memphis, they didn't even go to the game.
Right.
That's right. They didn't even travel.
Yeah, literally didn't even fly into the – it was in Memphis, too. It was a huge problem because it was their one time in the West, one time at Memphis. People had paid a fortune for courtside seats.
They must have been pissed.
LeBron wasn't even in Tennessee.
So think about the state. Oh, think about them calling you and saying, hey, we're going to leave you at home for this one.
Sure.
In hockey, though?
I wish Jeff McDonald would do that here.
Every once in a while. Me too. Here's Josh Leuenberger, Raptors reporter. What did you make of that comment post-game from Nick Nurse?
Well, I'll tell you this. Nick Nurse sounded as exhausted as we were in the studio last night in that clip there. I think the best thing to come out of last night's game was that it's the last West Coast game of the season. No more late starts.
Well, that's true. And that's not even that late. I mean, it was a 9:30 tip-off. They can deal with that. And
overtime, though. It was 12:30, 1 o'clock by the time that game ended.
All right.
Josh, you're getting soft.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Who are you kidding?
I know. We got the nice backup studio to work in, too.
Well, that's where we are right now.
It was a fun time.
Yeah, I thought it was an entertaining game. I mean, I didn't think Oklahoma City didn't show much until the final 7 or 8 minutes. And then when Paul George fouled out, that was it, effectively. I didn't think Russell Westbrook, even though he had his numbers, which he always does, didn't scream like this was a dominant Westbrook night necessarily. But, I like that Nurse said, listen, we're going to take everything we can out of every experience because it's all about where we're going to be in 3 weeks.
Yeah, and there's your lesson for the Raptors there, because they were on their way to one of those rare 48-minute effort, 48-minute performances, and what would have been one of the most impressive wins of the season. Pretty much wire-to-wire dominance until the fourth quarter there. And I think that's where a lot of Raptors fans will get concerned is, well, they let the Thunder back into the game. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't great. They coughed up the lead in the fourth there. But to your point, Brian, I think the lesson that you take out of that game is maybe more valuable than what you would have gotten out of it had they continued to blow them out of the water. Instead, they took their foot off the gas, and there's your lesson there. You take your foot off the gas against a capable team like that, and in the case of last night, you have to work 5 extra minutes. And in the case of a lot of other nights, especially in the playoffs, you lose that game. So I think there's your lesson there. And then in the overtime period, I thought they looked really good. I mean, they held OKC scoreless for 4.5 minutes. They locked down defensively, and we've been saying this all year. When they play like that defensively, they're as good as any team in the NBA. We just haven't seen it as frequently as we're going to need to see it in the playoffs. So I do think you take something out of that game, and that's a valuable experience at this time of the year, especially when you've got a schedule like the Raptors have from here on out. They'll see OKC again on Friday, and after that, they're not going to see another elite team or anything close to an elite team. And that doesn't mean they'll be tested because, I mean, Brooklyn, Miami, those teams are fighting for the playoffs. They're going to be hungry, but I think these are their last real playoff-caliber tests before the actual playoffs come.
Josh, you just mentioned when they're playing and playing well, they're as good as any team in the league. You're around all the games. You're around the visitors. What is the perception around the league amongst the other teams? Or have you heard chatter from other players on different teams or other coaches? What's the perception of the Raps heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're sort of the wild card, which kind of seems strange to say about a team that went into the season expecting to be a contender in the Eastern Conference. But I'm not sure anyone really knows what to make of the Raptors. To put it perfectly, I was on with Cause, I think it was yesterday, and he asked me if I knew who this Raptors team was. And I started thinking about it. And I'm like, no, I don't really know who they are, but I'm not sure that's a big deal because I know who they can be. And I think that's the perception around the NBA is everyone knows how good this Raptors team can be when Kawhi is healthy and playing and when he's not using the games as practice. We haven't, I'm not sure that we've seen Kawhi at his ceiling, at his absolute best, much this year, which is what makes them so scary because the come playoff time, if he's fresh and playing at his full capacity, he's still a superstar player, a top five caliber player in the NBA. And that's what's really interesting about all of this, because if this is even possible, I think Kawhi in all of this load management drama has sort of become underrated here in Toronto, where I think maybe people are starting to forget how good he is. But even around the NBA, he didn't play much last year. He was in San Antonio. So even before that, it's not like he was a team that was getting a ton of attention. And now he's a part-time player. So that sort of is what's lurking in all of this, is come playoff time, if Kawhi is that guy again, an MVP caliber player, I mean, this team is really good, can be really good.
With Josh Lewenberg, that's what I see. Listen, the wins speak for themselves. They're one of the top four teams in the East. And with Philly's big win last night, it feels like it's going to be Philly in the second round if and when that happens.
Yep.
But all the ingredients are there, I think, for them to have the deepest and most explosive, you know, 7 or 8 man rotation in the East, including Philly's starting five, including even what Boston could be if they met their expectations. Because what I see is when Kyle and or Kawhi don't play, the ball movement somehow improves, but it's there. You know, the capability for them to move the ball is there. They have a couple of killers in Kawhi, in Lowry. You've got Marcus Gasol here now where the ball movement has obviously been on display and the amount of open shots and assists have been escalating. You got Pascal Siakam, who is dominating games. Like his stat line last night, 33, 13, 6, 2, and 1. Like that's gross. And I think once you get to the playoffs and you get to the high-octane type moments, you're going down to a 7-man rotation of Lowry, Van Vliet, Fred's another guy who's back now, Kawhi, Green, Gasol, Ibaka, Siakam. And that 1 through 7, there's a lot of options, a lot of flexibility, and I think it's as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than any other 7-8-man rotation in the East.
No, I agree with you. Let's face it. This season hasn't unfolded in the way that the Raptors would have drawn it up necessarily. I mean, Lowry and Leonard, they haven't played more than 5 consecutive games together at any point this season. Just about everyone else on the roster has missed time. So that's not ideal. But at the same time, I think the Raptors have gotten everything they've needed to out of this season and arguably more, as you put it just now. It's like going into the season, there were so many question marks. We didn't know if Kawhi would show up and if he would be healthy. He did show up. He has been healthy. We didn't know if Lowry would be a good soldier, and he has been. We certainly didn't expect Pascal Siakam to be a rising star in the NBA, not just a most improved player favorite, because I think we may have seen that coming, but a legitimate star, that's been an added bonus. We certainly didn't expect Marc Gasol to be on this team, and while I know a lot of people look at what Jonas Valanciunas has been doing in Memphis and his career-high 33 points last night, it's not that the Raptors didn't think he was capable of that. It's just they were never in a position to give him the opportunity to do that. So Gasol comes in. He's not going to put up the numbers that JV is putting up in Memphis right now, but I think he gives them a better chance to win in the playoffs. So I think they're in a really good spot right now. The concern, if we're looking for one, is that, yeah, I mean, they haven't had a ton of time together to build chemistry and all of that. And as a result, I think they've been inconsistent at times, and at times it looks like they've never played together before. But I think the other end of that conversation, as Lowry put it the other day, is they're really good. They're really talented. They're all experienced. So they're smart players, and they believe, they're confident that when the time comes, they'll be able to figure it out on the fly. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, and we'll figure that out pretty soon, I would say. But I think, as you mentioned, Brian, they're in just as good of a spot, if not a better spot, than those other 3 really good teams in the East.
Thank you, Josh. Always appreciate it, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Josh Lewenberg, a Raptors reporter. Josh, with one eye on the NBA and one eye on March Madness, Pooley, is this a big tournament for you as a college guy or what?
Not anymore. It was a mega tournament. When I worked at the university, it was, you were so involved. And my 4 years as a student, we had great teams.
At Notre Dame, you guys were quality teams?
Great. So went to the Final Four the year before I arrived, and then Elite Eight, Sweet 16. And so a game that you may or may not know about, they lost when the Blue Jays' third baseman went the length of the court against them.
Danny Ainge?
Danny Ainge.
No way.
So playing pro baseball for the Blue Jays, college basketball for BYU at the exact same time. And I think it was after a year plus, maybe a second year with the Jays, he was a junior in basketball, and beat them 51-50 in Sweet 16 to go to the Elite Eight.
No way.
And then the year before, they lost to Magic Johnson's team in the Elite Eight.
So what happens on a campus when the team is playing?
It stops.
Like there's no class or anything?
Oh, it totally stops. It stops for every big game. And in those teams, almost the whole team from my freshman year went to the NBA. So Bill Laimbeer was the starting center.
No way.
Yeah, and Bruce Flowers. John Paxson came in the next year. Kelly Chipuka was there. Orlando Woolridge, he was fourth overall pick in the draft. Tracy Jackson, Bill Hanzlick played 13 years for Denver. They were all on one team.
And they didn't win the national title.
They didn't win the national title.
Wow.
No. No. Bill Laimbeer. You get totally immersed in it. I mean, that's a small school, right? And you get the entire school stops when it's happening.
Absolutely.
And then when I went back as a coach, we had good teams. I think we went to eight. We never went past that.
Well, I always love the stories. Notre Dame's a prestigious school, a big school that's got a rich sporting history. And they're in the tournament quite often. Not every year, but
year, but they have been almost every year. Yeah.
Right. And then you've got like Kentucky and Kansas and Duke. They're in it all the time. But when you hear the stories about a team that sneaks in.
Yeah, it's Bradley.
They haven't been in it for 38 years, and the whole alumni comes together. They're like, we all promised if they ever got back in the tournament, we'd all meet up again. It's amazing.
And Northwestern did it a couple years ago, too, I think, and all the actors came out of nowhere, Charlton Heston and guys.
Right. No, it's great. It's a great tournament.
Yeah, it's really fun.
It's a brilliant tournament.
It's like no other four-day stretch. The Thursday and Friday on college campus, you blow out of class. It should be a holiday on a college campus, because the games start at 11:30 and 11 o'clock, depending on where you are, noon, and it is full go from that point forward. Every bar, every restaurant is
Well, I remember it was jammed. Big at, like, Canadian University. Like, when I was at university, it was massive. We all filled out brackets. I had five different brackets and five different pools going.
But four-year players, you knew teams, you knew guys, they stayed at the school, and it was very different. I have been, through my playing career, I would go if I could, if there was a local regional. I'd go, because Thursdays and Fridays are the best days, because you get four games at a local regional.
It's incredible.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It's outstanding.
So much fun.
Yeah, I was down in Pittsburgh last year. We went to a game. We went to see Duke play, actually. And I think it was in the Sweet 16. And I was at Mellon Arena or whatever. So it was cool. Like, it was cool to be in there.
But it wouldn't have been at Mellon Arena. That thing's gone.
Or whatever the new
one is. Oh, the new one.
Is.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is. I thought it was called Mellon, but maybe
something
it's not. Or PBG.
Painting.
PPG Paints. That's paint. It. Yeah, PPG Paints.
And Pittsburgh's a pretty gritty town, too. Speaking of your Ontario towns.
Well, Nathan tweeting in saying he put up on Facebook that, he suggested Beaverton, and he already got two likes, the plumber or the lumber guy and the mayor. So Beaverton's pretty jacked up, just to be mentioned.
Hashtag Beaverton.
Because there's a lot of people from small, gritty towns, and they are furious they're not included in this.
Well, there's a pride in being gritty, clearly.
Absolutely. So the final is Sudbury versus Oshawa. It's neck and neck. We'll keep you updated.
And this is over when the show is over?
7 o'clock. We'll make the announcement, the final segment. You can get online and vote at Overdrive 1050. All right, we've got a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Carolina, April 2nd. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you will have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this Maple Leaf was teammates with the O-Dog in both Toronto and Carolina. I know who it is.
Harold Drucken.
That's who I was thinking.
I recruited Harold Drucken.
He He was from
East Coast of Canada.
Newfoundland.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. His dad was
through
a blast.
I didn't realize.
He was a good player.
Like
growing up, he was. Then he went major junior. I was recruiting him.
There weren't a lot of NHL players ever from Newfoundland. Like, it's a big deal when they make. What's the population of Newfoundland?
Got to be quite significant, doesn't it?
Well, it's a massive island.
I don't know.
Do you want
been there?
Do you want to throw a guess out so we can
nope,
try to carve
but I've been
you up?
There. I landed there with
2 million.
Get out of here! 2 million.
Chance.
200,000 tops.
Of all of Newfoundland?
I'll bet you that's too high.
That might be high.
500 grand. What is it, Albert?
525,355.
Wow, so 525,000 people.
But it includes Labrador as well.
Well, then that doesn't count.
It is called Newfoundland and Labrador.
No, it's not.
That is.
No, it's not.
Dude, haven't you seen the commercials? The Newfoundland province. And Labrador.
Yeah, that's the promotion. That's not the province isn't Newfoundland and Labrador.
Well, what's Labrador? Just its own thing?
I guess.
It's Quebec. It's its own thing.
No, Quebec's a province. Cooley, you're intelligent.
We landed in Newfoundland.
But no, what we want to know, is it Newfoundland or Newfoundland and Labrador?
It's Newfoundland, independent of Labrador.
What
Labrador, they're just doing their own thing, oh. They're
what the
doing
hell is,
their own
what
thing.
Is Labrador, though?
It's just a place up there.
Just but a how giant it... dog that runs around Newfoundland. That's all it is.
Wouldn't that be incredible if that was the case? This is why people hate Toronto. This conversation right here.
Yeah.
2 million, the population of Newfoundland.
Yeah, where's Labrador? Oh, he's over there taking a dump in the field. That big dog.
Oh, it's just a dog, dude. Yeah, go ahead, Al.
I'm on the government website, and it's Newfoundland. It says Newfoundland Labrador.
I think that's a marketing ploy.
Yeah.
I think it's a marketing ploy because there's a little flower on it.
Guess what? What stays in Vegas isn't like a real place. That's
a slogan.
Exactly.
Labrador is a place.
I understand that Labrador is, but when they're trying to rope you in, they say Newfoundland and Labrador, but I don't think Labrador might technically be a part of Newfoundland.
Get to the wiki page and see when they joined the two words, because I think this is something that's going to be fairly recent.
Like, here's what I'm thinking. The Netherlands and Holland are the same thing. Like, Holland is a province within the Netherlands. The country is the Netherlands, so maybe that's what it is. Like, Labrador is kind of a sector of Newfoundland. All right, who cares? It doesn't matter. Now we got to get someone on from Newfoundland because we want to get Tess on from Sudbury. Mullen will represent Oshawa.
You think he can represent Oshawa?
Oh, have you looked at this guy? Go look at the sleeve he's wearing.
There's grit. There's grit there.
Yeah. Ray's coming up. We'll see if we'll quiz him on Newfoundland and Labrador.
He will have the same answers. He'll have the same answers we do, trust me.
He's as dumb as we are. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.